Today's guest is Laura Deming, who's a venture capitalist who funds companies working on anti-aging and life extension technology.
Why work on longevity?
And the thing that I want to say is, like, I just don't think about it that way. I mean, I do in many practical ways. You have to frame things that way in the context of drug development. But the question I care about is, like, what do I want to do? Like, when I'm 80, how strong do I want to be? Okay, and then if I want to be that strong, how well do my muscles have to work? Okay, and then if that's true, like, what would they have to look like at the cellular level for that to be true? And then, okay, like, what do we have to do to make that happen? That's really the, in my head, it's much more about agency and, like, what choice do I have over my health? And, like, even if I live the same number of years, you know, can I live as an 80-year-old running every day happily, you know, like, with my grandkids? Like, that's much more the question in my mind than, like, the scientific question, which is at the core of our field and very interesting, but different, of what is aging.
Right.
Now, the reason that what is aging question is hard is because we have a million different definitions, and they're all for different use cases. Aging is partially programmed and many organisms that we see, and partially a random accumulation of damage that just, you know, I think you can try and answer that question with, like, how much of it is programmed and how much of it is not programmed. You can answer it a lot of different ways, but I really don't care about, I mean, I care about the question obviously a lot with my whole life, but the question I really care about is, like, what do I want to be doing at what age and how well? And it's really more of an engineering approach almost to then work backwards from that question to what do we have to do to get there.
Right. Okay. So just to make sure I'm totally understanding now, it's like, I'm probably hopefully going to live to be 80. There are a bunch of things about being 80 for many people that make their lives worse. And we've just accepted that those things are all going to happen to us in a way that we haven't done for things like getting cancer when I'm 30. We've, like, not accepted that we're willing to either die prematurely or have a lower quality of life. We're like, no, we're going to develop cures. And so this is like, let's not accept that we're going to be potentially physically weaker. Even I guess that we're going to have like white hair. Let's, like, give ourselves the option to see if we can develop technologies that give us choices about how we spend our 80th year and maybe our 90th and 100th.
Exactly. It's like making chronological age not a risk factor for health, essentially. You know, it's like if someone were smoking a lot and, like, getting, you know, a type of cancer because of related to that, we might be like, well, maybe we should, you know, either try and decouple the relationship between smoking. We'd have some opinion on whether this was a good thing or not. But the fact that chronological age, it's just rampantly ageist. We're just like, chronological age just should lead, I guess, to very much worse health. And that's the one category of risk factor that we kind of don't care about because it's just how things are. And I think there are very deep reasons why we historically have never questioned that, because I think it's a healthy thing to do psychologically when you can't change it. It's extremely healthy to have that reaction. But the problem is when technology forces you to ask a new question, you kind of have to face some of those biases and actually, like, interrogate them a bit more rationally. And I think that's kind of what's literally occurring in society. We're in the middle of the beginning stages of that, I think.
Why we think it's feasible to end aging.
I could, like, give multiple different lines of argument here, but it just obviously is. And I think that that should be the prior, and that, like, proving that it isn't, like, should really be a pretty high burden of proof. And that somehow we're in this really weird world where, like, that's the default belief. And then kind of, like, you have to fight to somehow prove this thing, which I think is, like, scientifically kind of just more plausible. So a couple different things. One is, like, just physically, there's really no physical reason, like, that demonstrates that this is impossible. Like, there's just, you can talk about the second law all you want, but that applies to global, not local systems. And so, like, you know, we are a collection of 10 to the 27 atoms. Might be pretty hard, but, like, you know, the question is just, can we keep those in some configuration that, like, resembles health? And, like, there's just no physical argument that that is impossible. So if anyone says something like that, I just think that they're not, like, thinking in a way that's, like, physically reasonable. It might be quite hard, but, like, it's definitely not physically impossible. So then the question is, well, how hard is it? And, you know, fair point. Like, up until the 70s, I would have been like, damn, probably, you know, that's, I think as a kid, my youthful enthusiasm might not have translated as a practical adult into kind of the same belief. It might have been like, well, really, if we look at what we have to work with, there's just nothing that's making anything live longer. Lifespan empirically seems pretty fixed. And so while this might be physically possible, it seems practically impossible. The really, really weird thing, and I honestly sometimes just kick myself for what decade I got to be born in, is, like, this is the decade where we saw a bunch of things happen that were really surprising. And I can't emphasize how surprising they are. Like, again, as a child, not knowing anything about biology, I kind of expected these things to potentially be true. But as an adult, knowing a lot more about the number of atoms that are working together to make us humans, it's completely mind-blowing. Like, to just give one anecdote, and we can dive much more into different areas. In the 1980s and the 1990s, researchers zapped a bunch of tiny worms. And these are worms that have, like, thousands of cells compared to our, like, you know, trillions of cells. You know, these worms have no blood, no bones, no... They're just completely different from us, as big as your, like, fingernail. They zapped them with rays that mutated them randomly. They found worm mutants that lived longer, in some cases about twofold longer than normal, or, you know, with eventual mutants about twofold longer than normal. And if you change the same gene that was found in that screen in a mouse, the mouse lives longer. That is one of the most insane things I've ever heard.
That is insane.
Even if you cared about longevity and engineering longevity, like, that kind of single gene control of lifespan and translation across the species barrier is insane. Now, I'm not arguing that that's how we'll live a very long time, is that single gene type strategy, but just to give an example of what we see in the field, it's like, shouldn't be true. It really shouldn't.
But won't life get boring?
I guess many people suppose that folks would have progressively less fulfilling lives on the margin as they lived longer. Or I guess that it would demotivate people to live forever. Sometimes people say something along the lines of like, death gives life meaning. And I have some, I have some part of me that has that feeling. What's your reaction to that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can for sure promise you that no medicine is going to give you immortality.
Okay,
like, that's something I can 100% guarantee. So what we're not talking about here, which I think is maybe one of the most important distinctions to make, is eliminating death. Again, no medicine can give you that, and that's not on the table. You know, what we're talking about instead is agency over how long you live, and I guess some more agency over, like, when you might die from natural causes. Like, again, the base rate of accidents equals, even if medicine cured all your other problems, like, you'd still have to work pretty hard, you know, to be a continuing process. So just to be clear, you know, there's no magic button that we're going to create that's going to fix that problem.
Right. How about just, like, this kind of feeling less fulfilled in your 400th year relative to your 200th? I guess I can imagine you making two arguments. One is like, well, then you can choose to die at any point. Yeah, we can, like, make that an option. Or I can imagine you making the argument that's like, I don't know, we don't know what it's like to live to 400. Maybe it's actually freaking great. And assuming that, like, we're going to be bored with life by 400 is assuming something that we just really, really can't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like there's an answer I should give and there's an answer, like, I want to give. And, like, the answer that I feel like I should give is kind of what you said. We don't, well, if you don't like it, then you don't have to stick around, but also probably good to have the option. I think an answer that I should give is, like, that's not a good enough reason. Like, you know, frankly, that might be true for you. One might be a little bit bored, but that is, like, absolutely not a good enough reason not to develop medicines that could save lives. Like, just definitely doesn't even begin to pass the cut. And so if you want to, like, make an argument against that or against spending a lot of time and energy doing that, the reason needs to be a lot better than, like, we might be a bit bored as society. I take that very seriously, to be clear. Like, I mean, I think even living to, like, age 30 is, like, actually difficult. Like, there's a lot of stuff you go through in life, and life is hard. But I just think, you know, we're not going to stop medical progress because of these specific, I don't think they're good enough objections. But then I think the other thing I want to say is just, like, I mean, I totally empathize with that point of view. Like, again, like, you know, even living a normal lifespan, you encounter grief and hardship and boredom, and these things are all part of our experience. But, I mean, I just want to be optimistic about, like, the idea that you can grow and the idea that, you know, there's so much to explore and so much to see and that we should try to make a world that we would want to live in. Like, I can't argue that life is worth living, but I can say that I think we should try to make it worth living and to act, you know, towards that. And I think this is in line with that value. And so it's like, yeah, can you like fix all spiritual problems? Like, totally not. But, like, should you try? Like, and should you act as though you know, perhaps, like, can go in that direction? I just personally believe that you should, you know?
Longevity progress over the next few decades.
So the baseline prediction, I think, in the absence of rapid acceleration from, like, new technology, including ML, was basically that I think in our lifetime, so, like, in the next, let's say, couple decades, aka therapies that would be available, you know, to us and would have efficacy, you know, a couple decades out, you're not going to see hundreds of years, a doubling of lifespan. Plausibly, even you won't see decades added to life. But I think there's a couple of things that inspire me in the next few decades. One is, I think, giving people, let's say like age 50 or older, just enormously more agency over their health and well-being. So it's very inspiring to me to think about someone starting a second career. I think folks have talked about, like, why not get a PhD at any point in your life? Or, like, why not go become an amazing artist? Like, could Picasso arise, you know, at age 50, you know, in a population? And I think often the reasons that people in that age range, I actually feel really angry about this. I think often people are like, oh, older people don't have good ideas. They're just dumb. Like, you know, the younger people are somehow like have a blank slate, and that equals like, and there's some of that. But also, if you're over age 50, I mean, you just have a lot more physical disability to deal with. Not a lot at that age, but like you're starting to feel the impact. You have to be much more mindful of your health. You can't pull all-nighters. Like, you have all of these just like physical things going on that indeed make it much harder to come up with good new ideas and to pursue them amorously. Like, this is definitely a, like, there's definitely, you know, maybe a blank slate component, but also a real physical component. And so I would like to even the playing field, you know, for people of any age to have like the most adventurous point of their lives and to feel physically able to embrace that. Like, I think there are real ways in which lack of energy can impact your ability to do great work. And, you know, it'd be really cool if, you know, like, for example, everyone's parents could have like an incredible second career where they're like your direct competitors, you know, in industry or something, or kind of like amazing artists. So that's one thing. The other thing that I would say that's coming in terms of ways that longevity will change the world the next couple decades is just social change. Like, we may plausibly have longevity drugs for dogs, as in drugs that say lifespan extension on the label, which we can talk about later. Again, those are not finally approved, but we may have those, you know, at some point in the next decade. And I think we may also show for the first time that we can make drugs that make humans live longer, again, by very small amounts, but that we have control over that in the next decade. And I think that will kind of kick off a process of social change around our approach to longevity. That's also quite interesting. So by default, there were no huge revolutions. I mean, no huge revolutions in terms of like, we're all going to live forever. This is going to be amazing. But in my mind, these are two things that are incredibly like revolutionary because they're the seeds of things to come.
Surprising things that make mice live longer.
On your website, you have this incredible list of 95 things that make mice live longer, quite a lot longer in some cases. And I want to mention a few of them so that people get the idea that, yeah, not only do some of these increase lifespan significantly, some of them are also drugs already approved for use in humans for various diseases today. So for example, removing senescent cells increases mice lifespan by 135%. And maybe just so we kind of understand what that even means a bit better, could you say more about that? Like, what are senescent cells and what removing them entails?
Sure. I would say this is a field that we don't yet know translates to humans. So we don't yet know if this work will like be relevant to humans. And also, I think like there's a lot of caveats around the work that's been done in mice. I'm just caveating because I'm, you know, you want to do that when you're a scientist. But like, basically, a subset of your cells might accumulate quite a bit more damage or like have very specific phenotypes that are bad with age. And they seem to kind of like both themselves, you know, not be quite healthy enough, but like maybe also make the environment around them a little bit unhealthy. If you just target these cells in particular and eliminate them with genetic tools in mice, you can make the mice a lot healthier, you know, during an aged part of life. And I think that, I mean, honestly, like these results were very surprising to me. Like the first results in this field were in accelerated aged mice, so mice that were artificially aged. And I was like, okay, like fine, whatever, you know, like maybe that works there, but it won't translate. And like, you just keep seeing, I think like, income benefits. There's a lot of caveats to this. I think this feels like working out how important senescent cells are in, you know, human relevant indications. And so we still don't know how important they are there. But this is just a weird one where like aging keeps doing these things where you're just like, no one is like, this should work. Everyone is like, this is the weirdest thing that should work. I mean, to give an example, which I think everyone is talking about now. So probably a lot of your listeners actually have heard of this one more recently. You know, this lab expressed a set of factors which are kind of, you know, like a little bit like cause cancer sometimes and, you know, sort of reprogram cells, you know, in a very extreme way, just cyclically in mice and allowed them to, you know, like have these health benefits and kind of, you know, like just stuff that like just no one in their right mind would look at that and be like, yep, that's probably going to result in longer lived, healthy mice, you know, seems to affect aging in ways that we really wouldn't have expected. So like, I think I'm just trying to say like, look, like no one is arguing that like from first principle, you should believe that like eliminating just old cells or reprogramming cells developmentally across the whole mouse, like in a really extreme way, is going to make them live longer. But just weirdly, when we try crazy stuff like this, it seems to actually, you know, work some subset of the time. And again, no claim it'll translate to humans, but just like, this is, again, this is empirical data. This is not us, you know, like I'm always like, this is weird that it's happening. And I don't believe these results, it just shouldn't be true that this is working.
Right, right. But it's this proof of concept, whether or not it actually works in humans. It's like lifespan is actually just like a malleable thing. And when we poke around with some things that seem to be associated with lifespan, sometimes they actually just affect lifespan. And that's insane.
Exactly. And there are like use studies where, you know, you can just like mutate like a fraction of genes in an organism. It's like, yep, some of them make them just make the thing live longer if you just, you know, it's like not actually that hard to find genes that if you change, make an organism live longer. Now, again, this doesn't mean that they're going to live unbounded longer. It doesn't mean like immortality or like thousands of years, but like lifespan is really not that hard to change as a parameter, you know, like just empirically.